Our Bible study for the all the way to the end of April, we're looking at, I'm choosing nine major events. I don't know if we'll get all nine covered, but nine major events that we find in the Bible that shape the world as we know it. And last week we talked about the sin of Adam and Eve. So I want to give just a little summary of that, and we didn't quite finish talking about it. And I wanted to read you a quote that I've read from a man by the name of Ken Ham. Then we'll finish up with that, and then maybe have a few comments. We had some comments last week, some good ones, and we'll kind of share those just a little bit, and then we'll go on with the third major event, which we're going to cover is the Great Flood. So, God created man to reflect his own image for the purpose of ruling over his creation. In other words, if somebody was asked us, why did God create you? What's the purpose? I think that's the main purpose, is God wants us to reflect his image. He made us in his image. He wants us to reflect that. He wanted us to rule over creation, produce godly offspring to fill the earth. In so doing, we give God the glory. And we read the scripture in Revelations 4, verse, I think it's verse 10, 4 and 10, which says God created us for his pleasure. And he receives pleasure from his creation. Even though he made us a little bit lower than the angels, he gave us intelligence, the ability to think and to reason, and he gave us the freedom to choose to obey him. He didn't make us like robots. You know, sometimes we say, well, why would God make us so that we do so many evil things and this and that and so on? Well, in order for God to give us pleasure, he gave us a free will to do, to pick and choose between what is really life or death. Well, what did Adam and Eve choose? Okay, they had a choice. In the middle of the garden, there was the tree of life, and then also there was the tree of knowledge of good and evil. And they were doing pretty good, I think. I think we could say they were doing well until Satan entered into the serpent and convinced Eve that hey, this fruit on this tree of knowledge of good and evil, it really looks good. And guess what? God, he told you that you're going to die, right? And Eve agreed, and he said, no, you're not going to die. And he said, if you eat of it, you're actually going to be like God and going to be able to know some things that you didn't know before. Well, that's true. They did find out some things they didn't know before. They found out they were naked. They tried to hide. And of course, we know that they didn't physically die exactly at that moment they ate of it, but their physical body started to deteriorate, and then we know Adam died at the age of 930. The main thing that we need to get out of it is that they spiritually died. They were separated from God, and you remember God put angels to guard so they couldn't get to the tree of life, and they had to go out on their own, and their punishment, they were punished. They received a punishment. You know, I guess we could say that, or actually a consequence. There was consequences for their actions. There are some who suggest that mankind was mortal and kept alive by eating from the tree of life. And we discussed that a little bit. I don't know the answer to that. It doesn't say that they were told they had to eat from the tree of life, but it was there. And I think some have concluded that because they had the tree of life, they could be immortal. Okay, when God drove them out of the garden, that is when they began to physically die. Others suggest that sin was the sole reason for death, and prior to sin, there was no death. And that was the discussion that we were having at the end of the class. There was no death to man or animal until God killed some animals to produce covering for Adam and Eve's nakedness. Remember that he gave them some animal skins to better cover them than the fig leaves that they had sewed together. Well, when you read all the different commentators, there's no dispute whatsoever between the Bible scholars that sin causes mankind to be spiritually separated from God. I don't think anybody questions that whatsoever. And all would agree that it took the blood of Jesus to take away our sins, which happened several hundred years later. Now, we ran out of time last week. I was about to share with you some thoughts from Ken Ham. Now, Ken Ham is the scientist who opposes the theory of evolution, and he says that everything in the universe was created just as God said in 6 days, 24 hours, and so he believes, just like the Bible believes in that regard. He contends that there was no death to animals or humans until sin was committed. And so I'm not going to read this whole article, but I just want to share with you, I thought it was worth sharing for you to think about a little bit. He says, here's what it says. Many times I have been confronted by a pastor or a theologian who has said, in a mocking way, there had to be death before sin. Are you saying that Adam would never have stepped on an ant? What you say cannot be true. So this is his reply. He says, this sort of objection is used as many colleges to lead students to believe that the literal Bible teachings about creation cannot be accepted. The way I would answer this objection is summarized as follows. Here's what he said. We live in a fallen world. As Paul says, it is a world groaning because of sin. We do not know what a perfect world is like. We have never experienced one. We were all born sinners in a sinful world. Now I'm going to stop there, and I'm going to say, if I was to make that sentence, I would change that, and I would say we were all born and became sinners. That's the way I would say it. He says, how can we therefore use our experiences in the fallen world to understand what the world was like before sin? How can evolutionists know that the present is the key to the past? Because we have been taught to think this way, many Christians base their theology on the feelings and their experiences in the present rather than on God's revelation. Actually, it is a revelation that is the key to the past. A written revelation from one who has always been there, who tells us what the world was like, what happened to it, and why, and what will happen in the future. Dare we call God a liar just because we don't yet know how to correlate our present experiences with His perfect creation of the past? Then he cites this example in the Bible where God caused the children of Israel to wander in the wilderness for 40 years, and they never had to have another change of clothes. Their shoes never wore out. Okay, we're all familiar with that story. He says, what happened to the Israelites is totally opposite to what we normally observe today. I believe this gives us just a little glimpse of what God can do. Could not the infinite God so design and sustain the creation so that there was no death and no wearing out before sin, just as His world states? Is this not what is going to happen in the future, when there will be no death and no wearing out, just like it was originally? Must we not admit the possibility of situations in the perfect creation which are so far beyond our experience that they also are beyond our imagination? There could be many other points to ponder in regard to this matter. The main point is this, or is that death, bloodshed, and suffering of living creatures were not possible before the fall. It was a perfect world, sustained totally by the infinite Creator. To use objections such as Adam stepping on an ant is to use our fallen, fallible brains and our finite experiences in the fallen, groaning world as a judge on the infallible, never-changing word of the Almighty, Holy, Infinite Creator God. It is most often just such a trite argument, he's talking about the ant thing, stepping on an ant, which justifies compromise with evolutionary ideas. Okay, since I read that, and Mike made a good comment, he talked about the different animals and their structure, and like lions have got claws, you know, to grip their prey, and fangs, and lots of other animals of prey. And here's something I thought of. I'm not sure how animals subject to death before sin would have that much bearing on the rest of the picture. And in Psalms 104, verse 19 and 23, and I'm not going to take time to read that. You can flip over there if you want to look at that. But that Psalm 104 is about creation, and one of the things it mentions is that the lions roamed at night looking for their prey, and then in the day, and then when dawn came, the lions would go to their dens, and of course that allowed mankind to go to the fields and work and not have so much fear of being preyed upon by those types of animals. Now, whether Psalms 104 is talking about it, you get the sense it's talking about the way God created things. So, I don't know if you want to make a comment or not on this, but to me, the most important thing is that death did occur to mankind.
I certainly don't agree with Ken Ham when he talks about no death. But I think the question is, death of what?
Adam and Eve
weren't going to die until they sinned, but to say that no animals died
and
there was no death period, I think is a totally erroneous statement.
Because
of the fact, you know, what we just mentioned, God made animals, insects, etc., to live off of each other. They couldn't live unless they did.
Well, now, okay, we got to be careful, though. God can make anything happen.
He can, yeah.
But you're saying in our world, no, they live off each other.
Well, but our world is the world that was then, too. Now,
obviously
the Garden of Eden was a different place. It was different, I believe, than the rest of the world. Why else would God drive them out? They didn't want to go.
Right.
To keep them from coming back in.
Right.
Because the outside world was separate, was different.
I don't know if I would. What I'm saying is, I just know that God's capable of doing whatever He wants to do, and I'm not going to necessarily go there and say that the world we live in is exactly the way it was in the beginning. I'm not going to say that, but you could think that for sure. Kevin, did you have a comment?
God gave man dominion over everything. The life of man and woman is very distinct from the life of animals.
Right.
I'm agreeing with Mike. I'll say it
right,
a little different ways. With sin, man died as a result. The sin of man, though, the result of the sin of man wasn't inflicted upon animals necessarily.
They don't sin.
Well, right.
So right, right.
By the fact that Adam or Eve sinned, I don't think then caused death to ants in that case. So, the whole point about stepping on an ant was, to me, pointless in the sense that really the Bible didn't address the death of animals,
yes, and I agree with you. I accept.
I think that's supposition on his part,
right? And I think that his comment about the animals and stuff has to do with his disagreement with evolutionary theory. And I'm not going to get into all. I mean, there, when you start reading about all that stuff, it gets real technical. And I have a feeling that. He believes this way because it has something to do with his disagreement with evolutionary theory. That's just my estimation. But here's the bottom line to all this, and I want to stop here because we're going to get into the flood. But the bottom line to this, all to me, is that Adam and Eve had a choice. You could choose life or you could choose death. That choice is exactly the same as it is today. Choose life or choose death. Where we give our allegiance to, and the Bible talks about Satan being the prince and the power of the air. It also talks about Christ being a prince. And whichever prince you choose is going to determine your purpose and destiny in life. And if you want to choose life, you will choose God and the things that He asks you to do. If you want to go against God, you perfectly have that choice, but the consequences are so great. Okay.
When the serpent was talking to Eve and she was sitting there, she wasn't really thinking about life and death. I mean, I agree with you; it is life and death, but it's presented in a different way.
Right.
The choice presented to her was eat the apple or not eat the apple. But in essence, or eat the fruit, I should say, or not eat the fruit. But in essence, it became, you know, obeying God or disobeying God.
Right.
Choosing life and choosing death.
Yeah. But they were told that you will die.
Isn't it interesting that there's no mention made that Adam and Eve thought it was strange that an animal was speaking?
Yeah, I don't know. I can't explain that.
And there's so many things about the book of Genesis. That's
yeah, and the serpent was definitely a unique animal. That's all I can say. Unique is the best word I can come up with. Ezekiel 18 and 32 says, God has no pleasure in death of one who dies. Therefore, he says, turn and live. Verse 31 in that same passage says, get a new heart and a new spirit. All right. We're going to leave it there, and we're going to change gears now and talk about the flood. How many years between the time Adam and Eve sinned and the flood? I don't know. Does anybody have any thoughts on that? I'm not sure we know exactly. Okay. The what?
Creation, the flood, was about 1650.
Right? 1650. And how do they come to that through the genealogies, you're saying? Okay. All right. So Kevin says, using the genealogies from Adam to Noah, you can come up with about, you said 1650?
1656, I think, is
okay.
The exact number.
Okay. All right. In Genesis chapter 6, if you all turn there, verse 1 and 2 indicates to me that the sons of God, which I think represented the righteous, and I was talking to Mike this morning, and I have read commentaries, and he said Zur's commentary mentions that the sons of God would refer to descendants that came from Seth. And we know, what do we know about Seth? Well, was Seth after the mold of Cain, or was he kind of after the mold of Abel? Well, what do you know about Cain and Abel? What was Abel? God-fearing person?
Yeah.
Absolutely he was. And apparently Cain absolutely was not, because he did not offer the sacrifice that God had asked. And it made Cain mad, and he slew his brother. And then Seth came into the picture after Abel was killed. And Seth also was a God-fearing man from my study that I found. So the descendants of Seth, I think we could say, this is the thought, that the sons of God were these descendants. And they represented those that were righteous. It says they began to marry the daughters of men, which represent the unrighteous, and Mike pointed out to me that those would be the descendants of Cain. The end results of such a union, How does that usually turn out when a righteous person marries an unrighteous person? Well, somebody's going to say, well, I know of cases where people married non-Christians and they converted them, and that has happened. But in general, that doesn't happen. And you know exactly what happened when you see the picture of the Israelites. The Israelites were not to, they were not to intermarry with the Canaanites. And why was that? Well, the Canaanites were wicked.
Just a point there, I think, about it. Assuming Seth was a God-fearing man, we're talking 1,000 years later. That doesn't mean all descendants of Seth were necessarily God-fearing men.
But I think it's a representation. And you're right. Just because you, and we've been studying the kings, and we found that out. We have some good kings, and then their sons turn around and they're horrible, and vice versa. So that's a good point.
There's righteous that have been sons of Seth and unrighteous that have been
right.
Sons of Seth.
And we know eventually they all became unrighteous with the exception of eight people. So it's a good, well point. Good point, well taken is what I'm trying to say. All right, so anyway, the end results of such a union between the righteous and the wicked usually does not turn out good. Paul told the Corinthians 15 and 33, 1 Corinthians 15, 33, do not be deceived. Evil company corrupts good habits. Proverbs 13 and 20 says, he who walks with wise men will be wise, but the companion of fools will be destroyed. If one is only interested in choosing a mate primarily by their outward beauty and doesn't consider their spiritual inclination, they become fools, don't they? They become fools in this regard. They place themselves in a very unfavorable position. Now, I'd like to share with you some comments that I read from Matthew Henry, who's a commentator. And I'm not sure what's... Is he in the 1800s? Anybody know? Was he a commentator from the 1800s? I'm not sure. It might be before that. I'm not sure on that. But here's what he says. In all ages, there has been a peculiar curse of God upon marriages between professors of true religion and its avowed enemies. The evil example of the ungodly party corrupts or greatly hurts the other. Family religion is put an end to, and the children are trained up accordingly to the worldly maxims of that parent who is without the fear of God. Now, can you think of any examples that fit what Matthew Henry's talking about here? What comes to your mind when you think in terms of marrying outside of those that are to be righteous? Solomon, yes, that's one that comes to mind right away.
Samson,
very good. Who else? I don't know how Ahab would have turned out, but Ahab married Jezebel, who was definitely on the wrong side of town, as we say.
Hosea was supposed to marry
a harlot.
God told him to marry a harlot.
Okay. And the idea was he wanted to create a picture, wasn't he, for Israel? And then, of course, the other one that comes to my mind is just the whole nation of Israel. And think of how things turned out for them when they intermarried. All right, so we get the idea of his point. All right, Matthew Henry also says, "We profess to be the if we profess to be the sons and daughters of the Lord Almighty, we must not marry without His consent. He will never give His blessing if we prefer beauty, wit, wealth, or worldly honors to faith and holiness." Would you disagree with that? I wouldn't. 2 Corinthians 6:14 says, "Do not be unequally yoked together with unbelievers, for what fellowship has righteousness with lawlessness, and what communion has light with darkness?" And then Matthew makes this, I got two more comments from him. Here's one, another one. He says, "The wickedness of people is great indeed when noted sinners are men renowned among them." And you remember that it talks about these men being renowned. Okay, well, usually men that are renowned, what are they? Aren't they usually kind of the leaders of different groups? Okay, men of renown usually lead a lot of people, don't they? Who's some of the renowned people that we have today? Well, the movie stars a lot of times would be considered people of renown. Okay, maybe your presidents, and et cetera, that sort of thing.
When you're talking about, the name that came to my mind was Jesse James.
Jesse James.
He's a man of renown.
Yeah, yeah,
certainly not.
Yeah, and there was people that, even though they knew he did evil things, there was people that pulled for him, didn't they?
Still do.
Probably, yeah.
There's all kinds of famous people that are really infamous, I guess you could say.
But instead of famous, they're infamous, yes.
By saying renowned, do you mean good person or bad person? That's, I guess, I've always kind of thought of them as being good persons, but not necessarily.
I was thinking in this case, the way the Bible refers to it, I almost thought it referred to them as being infamous type people. He says, "Very much sin was committed in all places by all sorts of people. Anyone might see that the wickedness of man was great, but God saw that every imagination or purpose of the thoughts of man's heart was only evil continually." Now, to me, the key that we need the key on here is he's talking about the intent of their heart. Okay, what was in their heart? And this is the one thing, we can judge people by what we see and how they act, but we don't know what's in their heart. And sometimes we're misled by looks, aren't we? Okay? But God knows exactly what you did and why you did it and what's in your heart. And he says that the thoughts of their heart was continually evil. And he knew that. And that's why he determined to wipe them out. Proverbs 4:23 says, keep your heart with all diligence, for out of it, what? For out of it springs the issues of life. And how true that is. Jeremiah 17, chapter, verse 9 and 10 says, the heart is deceitful above all things and desperately wicked. Who can know it? I, the Lord, search the heart. I test the mind, even to give every man according to his ways, according to the fruit of his doing. Hebrews 3, chapter 3, verse 12 says, beware, brethren, lest there be any in you an evil heart of unbelief in departing from the living God. But exhort one another daily while it is called today, lest any of you be hardened through the deceitfulness of sin. For we have become partakers of Christ if we hold the beginning of our confidence steadfast to the end. While it is said, today, if you will hear his voice, do not harden your hearts as in the rebellion. Well, mankind has been rebelling all through life, haven't they? All through life. And there's people constantly trying to get you to rebel. And we're right now in America, we're going through a terrible stretch of people trying to get people to rebel. And they're telling all kinds of lies and creating all kinds of scenarios to get people to rebel. To show up as like in mob violence. That's why I've always thought that it's not good to be around mobs. You know, the way mob violence works, people get all worked up, and the next thing you know, they're not thinking. They're not thinking about what's right. They're just thinking about what the mob's doing, and next thing you know, stuff starts happening, and you've created some horrible sins. I'm going to make one more comment from Matthew Henry, and then that'll be all. He says, God saw man's wickedness as one injured and wronged by it. He saw it as a tender father sees the folly and stubbornness of a rebellious and disobedient child, which grieves him and makes him wish he had been childless. Well, it uses words like we use when it talks about that God said he was just sorry that he made the world. He decided he was just going to wipe it out. Will somebody read chapter 6, verse 3 through 13 for us, please. Verse 3 through 13.
And the Lord said, my spirit shall not strive with man forever, for he is indeed flesh, yet his days shall be 120 years. There were giants on the earth in those days, and afterward the sons of God came into the daughters of men, and bore children to them. And those were mighty men who were of old, men of renown. Then the Lord saw that the wickedness of man was great in the earth, and that every intent of the thought of his heart was only evil continually. But the Lord was sorry that he made man on the earth, and he was grieved in his heart. So the Lord said, I will destroy man whom I have created from the face of the earth, both man and beast, creeping thing and bird of the air, for I am sorry I have made them. But Noah found grace in the eyes of the Lord. This is the genealogy of Noah. Noah was a just man, perfect in his generation. Noah walked with God, and Noah begot three sons, Shem, Ham, and Japheth. And the earth was corrupt before God, and the earth was filled with violence. So God looked upon the earth, and indeed it was corrupt, for all flesh had corrupted their way on the earth. And God said to Noah, the end of all flesh has come before me, for the earth is filled with violence to them. And behold, I will destroy them with fury.
Okay, let me just try to summarize what Ben just read to us out of the scriptures. If we would use descriptive words to describe the way of the earth, he gives them to us. Verse 11, it was corrupt and full of violence. Mankind was described as being very wicked. Verse 5 says, every intent of the thoughts of their hearts was only evil continuing. We've kind of already talked about that. This whole scenario, how did it make God feel? It says it grieved him. OK, Okay? He was sorry that he had made man, beasts, the creeping things, birds in the air. Therefore, he decided to destroy them from the face of the earth. I've got a question for you. I mean, I'm just curious if you've had this thought. Why didn't God just wipe out mankind and leave the animals? Why was God grieved over man and the animals? Anybody ever wonder about that? I just always wondered why God decided to wipe out the animals. I'm trying to think, and what did they do wrong that they deserved to die?
Well, the animals didn't do anything wrong.
Okay.
I don't know that I have an answer to your question or not, but for one thing, you know, we see people today that treat animals better than they treat human beings, and God doesn't do that. That's why we are to have dominion over the animals and the whole earth. God does not view, although God has compassion and takes care of the sparrow, the life of an animal is nothing compared to the life of a human being. And I don't know, maybe he wanted to wash the earth with the water. I don't know.
Anybody else have any thoughts or comments on that?
I think the fish still lived on, didn't it?
Yes, I think it was the animals that breathed, I think the way it described. They had the breath of life is the ones that were destroyed. And I can't help but think that Mike might be dead on, is that the whole thing was so corrupted and so filthy that God just wanted to just clean it. Make it clean and start all over.
Before creation, the world was apparently was covered with water because he separated the water from the land. So he went back to what there was as far as the earth.
The beginning.
Itself. You know, apparently he just started over with the earth itself.
Yeah.
Covered with water again.
Well, we don't have an answer for it. I just wanted to interject that because I was curious if anybody else had that thought. That's what come to my mind when I read this. But he says, "My spirit shall not abide in man forever, for he is flesh. His days shall be 120 years." Now, what other scriptures come to mind about God's Spirit not abiding with the people? See, he says, "My Spirit will not abide with them." Can you think of other scriptures that come to mind when you think about that? Well, this is what comes to my mind. Romans 1, 28 through 31. It says, "Since they did not see fit to acknowledge God," chapter 1 of Romans, "Since they did not see fit to acknowledge God, God gave them up to a debased mind to do what ought not to be done. They were filled with all manners of unrighteousness, evil, covetousness, malice. They are full of envy, murder, strife, deceit, maliciousness. They are gossips, slanders, haters of God, insolent, haughty, boastful, inventors of evil, disobedient to parents, foolish, faithful, heartless, and ruthless." Who's the Bible talking about there in Romans chapter 1? Is he talking about these people before the flood? Is he talking about these people before the flood and also people after the flood? I think he's talking about both. I think the reason, I know. The Bible tells us the reason that he wanted the Israelites to wipe out Canaan, the Canaanites, all those people that lived in the land of Canaan, was because of what? What was the reason?
Well, the final one was homosexuality. They had become debased so much to that point. That's what the words in the Greek means.
Well, but that's only one of many things. Yeah, that's only one of I think this list pretty well describes the way they probably were.
Yeah, but okay. I'm just saying that's the...
Yeah.
I think that is the bottom of that, and idolatry, I think, are the most...
Yeah, they didn't worship God at all. Didn't worship God at all. Okay. Galatians 5:16 through 18 comes to my mind. It says, "But I say, walk by the Spirit, and you will not gratify the desires of the flesh. For the desires of the flesh are against the Spirit, and the desires of the Spirit are against the flesh. For these are opposed to each other to keep you from doing the things you want to do. But if you are led by the Spirit, you are not under the law. It is impossible to walk by the Spirit of God if He removes it from you. Now, there is debate among many so-called Christians that says that would not happen. Once you accept the Lord, you're not going to lose His Spirit. What do you say to that?
It's not what the Bible teaches.
What does the Bible teach, Ben?
The Bible teaches that you have to continue in the Lord, that you can fall away.
Right. And this is a question that we might think about. Can you gain the Spirit of the Lord by obeying the Lord? And then can you lose it? And then get it back again? The Bible says, do not quench the Spirit. Now what does that mean?
Well, it means if you pull away from God, He's going to pull away from you.
And I get the feeling that there's a point at which finally you throw so much water on it, it's not coming back. At what point that is, I don't know. But I say I don't know. I think it gets to the point where, I'll use this as an example. You have seen people that were staunch Christians, and then they started kind of getting back, doing things of the world, to the point that they completely disregarded anything that's godly and got themselves in kind of like this picture that we read here in Romans, verse 28 through 31. Kevin?
Well, here in Galatians, we're talking about walking after the flesh or walking after the Spirit. I mean, it's possible for someone to begin after the Spirit and then walk after the flesh for years.
And then
say not coming back. I mean, there's still always the possibility of someone coming back.
Okay.
So
you're saying that you think
all of it relates to whether we're walking after the flesh or the Spirit. All of it still relates to man's free will. And if someone chooses to, I mean, major events can happen in people's lives to bring them back.
Right.
After 30, 40, 50 years.
Right. So. Well, we're out of time, but be assured that this is not the end of the story, because it says Noah found grace in the eyes of the Lord. But if it wasn't for that, we wouldn't be talking about this, would we? God was going to wipe out the earth. But Noah found grace in the eyes of the Lord. We'll take a short break. Does anybody have any other comments you'd like to make before we dismiss here?